FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is January 10th, 2017. And back with us from a well-deserved rest is Danielle Park. Danielle, Happy New Year.
Hey, you too, Kerry.
So, hey, we're not the only ones who had a Happy New Year. The stock market in the U.S. And elsewhere just going off the rails here, right? I mean, Trumpphoria is really all over the place, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you guys are the only ones that have made a fresh new high on the S&P and the Dow. The Canadian market is only back to where it was in 2008 and 2011. And, you know, it's interesting, things like the FTSE, people have been talking about it being up 20%. But in U.S. dollar terms, it's actually flat because the currency has been depreciating so much. The pound is weakened so much. I think people are misunderstanding in some cases the disconnect that's going on between, as you say, Trumpphoria or whatever in the U.S. market and the reality of emerging markets and many other markets in the world, which are only up in a non-currency adjusted sense or have reclaimed a prior cyclical high but have not broken out to anything like a new high.
Yeah, well, well, we still can't seem to bust through 20,000 on the Dow. I don't really know if that makes any difference or not. I mean, just from the moment the election ended, it's almost like it was programmed in. I don't think it mattered really whether Trump won or Hillary. I think this was baked into the cake. It was supposed to happen. That's just my theory. Whether there's any justification for it or not, that's debatable. But at some point, the world's going to, or the U.S. going to wake up from this hangover. I mean, looking at the currencies, well, the dollar's gone down a little bit in the past week, but the Canadian dollar had broken 74 cents. The Australian dollar had broken 72 cents. The euro was at 103. I mean, the currencies were just cratering. And you have to wonder if that was just a temporary reprieve. I mean, the yuan was predicted to go to 7 to the dollar. I mean, this is not the sign of a healthy world economy here.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the programming, because I've had this profound sense of the programmed algorithm, high frequency trading manipulation going on in the U.S. markets for sure. And it's interesting that the Canadian currency, we watched that one very carefully, of course, and it actually has not broken down significantly. We've been in the 74, 75 range for months, like most of 2016. We've been kind of flatlining. But the U.S. dollar index, that basket of, you know, against the world's major currencies, it's now up 42% since April 2008, when everyone was predicting its complete demise. Let's not forget, it was a secular decline.
Me too.
That, you know, bottomed in 2008, and everyone was telling us that that was, you know, it was going to banana republic in the next leg. And of course, that was the maximum pessimism and the maximum bottom that formed finally. And the secular trend has been in a bullish trend ever since 2008. Now, historically, you get around 10 years or so of these currency moves in the U.S. basket. So we'll see if we may be getting into the last year or two of that rally here. Obviously, nothing continues forever, but it's a massive move. And I think, you know, this weakening yuan theory, this weakening yuan is another theme that I think is going to continue in 2017. And with it, the rest of the Asian currencies, which are all trying to compete for business and for a shrinking pot of export business that's available and manufacturing jobs and all that. So you've got a massive deflationary impact coming from these weakening Asian currencies in the world. And, you know, as far as all the optimism that's built into, you know, when people talk about the infrastructure expectations, there's a hell of a lot of expectation on Trump and co. To pull off some magical reflation of your massive economy. And I think to think that anyone, one person, no matter who it was or who was elected, would be able to turn that massive ship on a dime. You know, if at the very best scenario, he may get some infrastructure spending passed that might stimulate, you know, a couple of years from now. But it'll all be a question of time, how long it takes. You know, will he lose power at the midterms? You know, how long is he going to be able to continue with this tweet storm and self implosions and reversing stories? And I mean, I don't care what party you're with. I think you got to be worried that we've got such a wacky leadership going on right now in your country.
Hey, there's a method to his madness, Danielle. You just don't get him.
I see. Okay. That could be. And you're not
one to be criticizing there. I mean, your guy there is, I sent you a YouTube there. He had his Marco robotic moment there where he got caught getting... The party got caught being bribed by the Chinese Communist Party, and they're confronting him directly, and he's just going back to the same soundbite. But anyway, we don't talk about politics here. But I think
the point is not any of that, really. The point is that I think, as I always say, no matter what political party you thought you were in support of, we should all be caring about the absolute, you know, capsizing of democracy and ethics that has gone on in the world by corporatocracy trumping everything. I mean, the corporations are running the show. And the most unsettling thing about Trump, in my view, is that he tries to talk like an average man or care about the average worker, but walk like this, you know, this corporatocracy that has been the problem all along. So I just don't see any change. When people talk about change, I go, what change? I don't see any change at all.
Well, he's not president yet, so let's see what happens. But I'm not overly optimistic. Not so much because I don't believe any one person can really change anything when you get down to it. It's the mob, you know, the fish is rotten from the head down. You know, this is a societal thing. It's not just like, oh, society is so good and pure. It's just these people who are leading us are so rotten. You know, the corruption is endemic here. I don't think you just blame it on everybody who wants their free cut of the pie and nobody wants to pay the consequences. Now, I want to point to a trend that I believe is coming in the next 2 to 3 years through Asia, especially communist China, and that is the pollution situation. So I told you I recounted my trip there back in October, and the air quality was just wretched. And, you know, they're making motions trying to ban new coal-fired power plants. And I think it's meeting with limited success. But now it's getting to the point where they're having to shut down parts of Beijing, shut down factories, because it's becoming a major health issue where, you know, I think it's going to be cutting years off these people's lives. I think this is going to lead, you would think, oh, taking away people's freedoms, harassment by the government, lack of freedom of speech. I don't think that's going to be the cause of the government falling out here in China. I think it's going to be unreined corporations polluting the atmosphere and the water, the place turning into a desert, and the people not being able to live and having this horrible quality of life, having tons of money and wanting to get the hell out and not being able to, and rebelling against these corporations and the corruption that allows them to do this. I think it's going to lead to a revolution in China. I think the people have just about had enough of it. I remember New York being polluted. I remember LA being polluted. It was nothing like this. I mean, there has been outbreaks of major pollution in European cities. Nothing like China. It's the entire country, Danielle. Every metropolitan area has air that's becoming less and less breathable by the day. And I'm not being hyperbolic here. This isn't an exaggeration. Continually, the air quality deteriorates daily. And the government is powerless to do anything about it. And they could have, they could give everybody in the country a Tesla tomorrow. It's not going to matter because most of the pollution in the country is not coming from automobiles. It's coming from industrial discharges, both into the water, into the soil, into the air. And I just don't see a solution for them. They think, oh, we'll transition into cleaner, higher tech manufacturing. Do you see them coming to terms with this?
Yeah, I do, because of crisis, exactly what you're saying. I think every change in the world has only happened when there's been absolute crisis and collapse of an existing system. Unfortunately, the proactive steps that are wise to take in advance of a crisis are very rarely taken in time. So I think, you know, this motif that you're talking about, you know, you're speaking of it with respect to China, but I would ditto those comments with respect to the global atmosphere in general. I think this whole trend of, you know, meaningless consumption and waste and throwing waste water, waste pollutants, waste everything into the atmosphere without any full cost accounting, you know, corporations creating madness and mayhem and not having to account for anything, not having to make reparations for anything. I mean, this is this era we've been through when it was all in the name of globalization and, you know, health and longevity be damned. And I think that's we've come to a tipping point there. So hopefully, you know, I hope it happens in China. I hope it happens all over, because we really do need to rethink a lot of our systems and approaches. And you know that story of the VW executive who was arrested near you in Miami on Saturday, right? Because mm-hmm. he had Oliver Schmidt. He was not the only guy, but he was one of the executives who was explaining to everyone how this cheating admissions, you know, software worked on the cars. And so he's arrested for this, you know, basically knowingly defrauding the American public for, you know, buying cars that were 40% more polluting than they thought they were. And they thought they were paying good money for a less polluting vehicle, all that kind of thing. They got away with it. And now they actually arrested him. So there you go. I think if we can get a bit more of that, it'll scare the bejeebers out of people. This elite class that has broken every law, been handsomely rewarded, gets away with it repeatedly. You know, I think you almost despair sometimes of the willingness to go after the wealthy class who have been breaking the laws. But at the end of the day, as you say, I think it devolves into a revolution, and finally they topple this oppressive regime. And I think that's going to happen. I mean, we've got to get this idea that you can be rich and get away with everything is got to stop or succeed or at least subside a bit. It can't be at the pitch and pace it's been going the past few years. And the most dumb arguments of all I hear are, and I think it embarrasses intelligent people on all sides when they get into these sort of snowfall fights of, well, my guy's less corrupt than your guy, or my person, you know, when someone makes a comment that so-and-so, you know, did these illicit things and broke laws and made money, and someone says, well, that's nothing because this guy was much worse. And like, I think this is not the issue. It's not a contest of who is the worst. It's a contest of who can start leading in an ethical manner. And I mean that from individuals. I don't mean from the top down. I mean that from the bottom up. And I mean the willingness to enforce the laws of the land against everyone and not just poor folks.
Yeah. Well, you know, my father used to say, if you do anything wrong long enough, you're going to get caught. How these VW guys thought they could pull this off, it's just extreme hubris. And hey, for every guy that gets caught, though, there's 10 that don't. It's just like the drug war.
So, oh, sure. And it wasn't just VW that was doing this, right? All the car makers have been lying and cheating on their emissions data.
Of course. Of course. You know, GM, we know this, you know, GM, you know, they got caught lying when Trump called them out and he said, you're making your cars in Mexico and selling them here. And then all the media accepts this as true. And then one guy goes to the place where they say they're making all the Chevy Cruises, and he goes to a showroom there and he checks the VIN numbers, and sure enough, the Chevy Cruises that are on sale in Lordsville, Ohio were made in Mexico. But they lied outright. So to think, because nobody's going to check them. And so this goes back to what you're saying, the individual is becoming a check on these corporatists. And that's a good thing, because, you know, it's an added layer of accountability, as well as on the media. The media enables these people, because the media is just a corporate organ. They're owned lock, stock and barrel by the big corporations, or they are big corporate entities in their own right. They no longer subsist on just advertising. They subsist on sponsorships. So they get paid off by the corporations, by the advertisers. So you'll never hear anything critical. You know, the big media is not criticizing VW for what they did. They're reporting a little bit on the news about it, but not a whole heck of a lot. Not a lot of in-depth reporting on the scam that was pulled.
Yeah, well, there you go. You go back to the vampire squid idea, which was originally with respect to Goldman Sachs being this financial conglomerate that controlled the world. And on a larger scale, I would say large corporations in general are this, you know, squid that sits on top of the earth and really controls what goes on in our laws and our systems and our products and our environment. And the great equalizer, frankly, is going to be the unsustainable nature of what they're doing, because at the end of the day, their hubris aside, they are not in charge of planet Earth, and the natural world's actually in charge of planet Earth. So things like air, like I was in California over Christmas, love California. They're running out of water, full stop.
This week they're getting flooded out.
You know, continue, and they still produce an enormous amount of the food that's eaten in America comes from that, you know, that valley, between mm-hmm. Palm Springs and LA. And it is literally running out of the aquifer that was left there by an ancient ocean, you know. So at some point, the reality of this has to really crash down on us humans before we get smarter and do different things. So I guess that's where we're headed. And at the end of the day, I think it's a necessity. So I'm grateful for it. You know, it's the same with the market stuff, the investment world. As long as they can keep prices going up, whether it's an attractive investment thesis, whether the risk is off the charts, none of that matters. Everybody's just playing along, throwing cash at the casino. And then, you know, when prices begin to implode, which they are destined to every cycle, and in particular, a cycle where there's been record leverage like this one and record, antics by all parties to try and keep prices going much longer and higher than they should. And when you have mutual funds, like the article I posted today, cash levels at mutual funds, U.S. equity mutual funds at, you know, multi-year lows again, about 3% cash. You know, at some point, all the indiscriminate buying has been done, and then you have to deal with the downside. And that's when the tide comes back out and reveals there was all this fraud and all this irresponsible behavior, and no one was doing what they should have, which was managing the risk. Everyone was riding along the flow and not worrying about the outcomes. And I think, you know, when that crash comes, when that revelation hits, when pensions are once more prostrate from their mm-hmm. deficits, when savers are having to go back to work because they don't have enough, you know, money set aside. I mean, all that is in the end cathartic and necessary, because until that happens, nobody really acknowledges the truth about the mm-hmm. the activities that have happened in the past, say, 5 years.
Yeah, very true. And that's what we're heading for. And everybody's going to be shocked, Danielle, when all the disclosures come out of fraud and massive fraud and scams and all that. The next Bernie Madoff, he's just a few headlines away. But that's what we're heading for. Anyway, got to go. But check out Danielle's excellent work. That article about the funds flows today, really good. Over at jugglingdynamite.com. Check out our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for the newsletters. And Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.